We often have a poem as a second reading in recognition that God is still speaking to us today. And I couldn't find one until yesterday afternoon after Butch's service. I found a poem that he had written about this passage. And I want to just say a couple of words before I read it. Butch Clark wasn't really his name. He was in a witness protection program. He had spent most of his life in jail for robbing banks. And he had been a really, really, really bad dude. And I spent 8 hours one day hearing his confession and holding that because he wanted to have some place to place it. But he could never put it down. He always was aware of the evil that he had wrought. But I want to say that he was a product of a culture that possessed him. As an Apache man who went to Vietnam, whose leg was blown up as he stepped on a mine, who spent a year in rehabilitation and came back to San Francisco on a stretcher and was spat upon by war resistors, and then lost all faith in humanity and went off to do the only thing he knew what to do, and that is to use a gun, because that's what he'd been taught in Vietnam. And he was part of a gang, the Aryan Brotherhood, in prison. I met Butch about 5 years ago when he came out of prison for the last time, and he was really looking for a lifeline. And I happened to be working with a program that worked with high-risk, low-income folks, mainly Spanish-speaking, and I was their, quote, soul coach, and had a couple of hours, separate hours, to talk with people. And I was really, really impressed with this man. He read some of his poetry to me, and such a fine mind and such a hard life. When I came to this church, Butch came to this church, and it was his lifeline. It was a place where Jesus met him, and he was able to cast his demons out of him. Not completely, but he sat in the back row, and those of you who knew him, he was head usher. And for Butch to be head usher here was a really big deal. For him to go with another person and take the money over to the safe place was a really big deal for somebody who had robbed a bank. But he was committed to change his life and to serve and was there for many, many people. So this is a poem that was written in his dark years, and it's about a prison called Soledad. This is Butch with a legion of demons. There are a legion of demons to turn a young man bad. None were more brutal than the prison Soledad. Squatting near Salinas like a bloated spider, Soledad was a host to that fearsome pale rider. The 60s and 70s, the decade in between, the monster mill flourished in the San Joaquin. As a house of many sorrows, she fit the bill. She reigned with horror. She taught us to kill. She thrived on fear in our daily strife. Treachery in our blood were her very life. Awash in hate and the tears of our mothers, we watched her crucify the Soledad brothers. Her evil moved on, typical of hate's unreason. Nightmares are the legacy of her killing season. Prison violence breeds a society of haters. Pray heaven has pity on the unwilling gladiators. Once in the abyss, with the exit door slammed, there can be no freedom for the minions of the damned. This giving honor to a man who found Jesus in this church, in the people, and who tried his best to change the last year of his life. In our reading from Luke's gospel this morning, Jesus steps off the boat, it says. He steps off the boat. It's a small phrase, but it's really a big deal that he steps off the boat. He and his disciples and the growing crowd have been in on the other side of the Sea of Galilee in Jewish territory, knowing that he would be speaking with people who knew some of his language because he was a Jewish man brought up in Jewish culture, calling them to reformation, to returning to God, and to learning new ways to be a faith community together. We know that he'd been with the widow of Nain. He'd helped cure the slave of the centurion, outsiders Jesus always looking for, always present with, always helping to heal people that we might not welcome into our circles. And so he and his disciples get on a boat. The Sea of Galilee is no lake. It's 12 miles long and 8 miles wide. The shorelines are steep, and so the winds come howling down through the valley, and there's great storms, and you can get on the boat when things are calm, and then suddenly a storm comes out of nowhere, and right before this story in Luke's gospel is when Jesus is asleep in the front of the boat, finally able to sleep, and a big storm comes up, and the disciples say, "Jesus, wake up, do something, we're going to die." They're afraid. What in God's name have they been called to do, following this man, risking their lives? They're not even going to get to the other side. They're afraid. Drowning is a terrible death, and Jesus is asleep, for heaven's sakes. And he stands up and he calms the storm, which is a powerful metaphor of who we're called to be as church, because Jesus doesn't just call out the demons in human beings. Jesus calls out the demons in nature and calms the storm. And I think about climate change and the storms of today that are literally drowning people, that are causing, wreaking all kinds of havoc on our creation, and how we are called to be church, to calm the storms, to be a place of peace for all of God's creation. And so they find their way to the other side, and they're in enemy territory. It is Gentile territory. These people do not know the Jewish customs from which Jesus has come. And they come to the country of the Gerasenes. The town of Gerasa was, in Jesus' time, the countryside was a Roman colony that had been captured, colonized, laid waste by brutal invasion, completely destroying the fabric of life. One of the biblical commentators that I read said, compare Gerasa to Milai. Remember Milai, the slaughter of hundreds of innocents, the devastation that that wreaks on a population. Was the man who met Jesus as he got off the boat carrying the communal shame and blame, terror, the story that had been silenced as people tried to accommodate to Roman rule, as the countryside began to thrive somewhat after that terrible invasion, as Greek philosophy and culture begin to pervade community life and people begin to settle into Roman rule and act as a colony, this man comes rushing out filled with demons. Gerasa was also a place physically where the plateau suddenly descended, crashing into the sea, where animals and humans, if they got started on that slope, would fall into the sea. When I worked some in Guatemala and visited some milpas, some cornfields on the side of steep mountains where only the poorest of the poor would try to harvest, which also added to the erosion of the soil, but was the only place they could have a cornfield, the people didn't say hello to each other or goodbye. They said, "Don't fall. Don't fall," was their greeting. And as they left each other, they said, "Don't fall," because if they had a wrong step, if they took a wrong step, they would go tumbling to their death in their cornfield. Gerasa was like that. It was perilous in many ways, literally and figuratively. So when Jesus and his disciples get off the boat, they step into unknown territory. They have to climb up. They are up there surrounded by these people who had been colonized and had a lot at stake for this man coming in with His good news. They did not want this Gerasene demoniac to meet Jesus. They did not want him to see the story of what had happened. They did not want to be embarrassed by him. They did not want to remember what had happened to them. They wanted him to see the nice picture that he should see. And Jesus wasn't surrounded by his crowd of followers. He only had his small band of disciples who'd been in the boat with him, who were worn out. The man was naked. Naked. He lived in the tombs, considered unclean in Jewish circles, a shame, something to be ashamed of, something to be hidden, something to be controlled, something to be chained and shackled by his community, kept away from the public eye. This man did not have a voice. He was to be completely hidden, disappeared from his community. But he broke his shackles. He kept coming back, a nuisance this time again. There he is. I think of the migrants that I see in Operation Streamline. Some of you have been to court every Wednesday. 70 or 80 migrants come in. They're small because of malnutrition. They're exhausted because they've been in the desert. And they come in to have their voice heard in court. 2 minutes maybe where they say, I do accept the penalty that you've put upon me. Maybe they've had a 5-minute interview with a court-appointed lawyer, but 70 or so of them come in, they are shackled hand and feet. These are people who couldn't lift a finger against those big Border Patrol guards if they wanted to. It is meant to completely subdue and humiliate them, to have control over them, so God knows they don't get loose in this town. And they are sent to either detention or they are sent back to their country. Or they're sent to jail for a long time. So when I think of this man who came to see Jesus, I think of them and I think of the children, the unaccompanied minors that I see every Wednesday. I asked them what their demons were and they said hunger, fear, gangs, that their parents were so afraid that they would either be conscripted to be a part of the gang or they would be killed or the women would be raped and disappeared, that they saved money, that they risked everything. They put everything they had into sending their child across thousands of miles to a country where they hoped they would have something to eat. The children told me that their demons were that they shouldn't be here, that they should be ashamed of who they are, that even if they got to stay in this country, that they'd never be accepted. They would never have a life that we have, that the life that they see on TV in their countries, they will never attain, that they'll never have papers to be able to stay. Those are their demons. This is the kind of person that came to see Jesus. This is the person that we are called to welcome. And we do in this church. We are such a welcoming church. I was so moved in the first service that I cried halfway through the service. It's a very tender community that makes a space. There were so many of us there on Sunday night at the vigil, straight, gay, lesbian, transgender, all kinds of people who said no to this hate crime, yet another in a long line of many. You might feel sorry for the pigs. I know I did when I read this story. The demons speak to Jesus. They're afraid of him. They ask to, instead of be called out and destroyed, they want to be sent into the swine. Well, that makes perfect sense in this story because in a Jewish culture, swine are unclean and the demons are unclean, so let them be together. But the pigs are the livelihood of that community. It's equivalent of about $175,000 in today's terms for those pigs to be destroyed, so it matters. The point is that everybody loses here. Everybody loses in a culture of shaming and blaming. That's the piece of the story that we have to pick up on, are the pigs. And when we cast out demon, do we turn from scapegoating one to scapegoating another population that's not ours? It says Jesus makes the man whole. And the community is terrified. The text tells us twice, they're afraid when they see this man dressed, sane, in his right mind, sitting at the feet of Jesus. Who is this man who can make whole? What is this church that makes people whole? United Church of Christ right now is beginning to be persecuted. There's some hate mail that we're getting because we're standing with all God's people. The long line of people that I mentioned in my email, the letter to the community that have been persecuted, it's not just gun violence. It is a rhetoric of hatred and fear that is aimed at particular people who are scapegoated by people, some of whom are mentally ill, but at least have been taught to hate and fear. And they have guns, assault weapons. They too have demons. How might we call out their demons? How might we be a place that sees them before it's too late, that loves them until they learn to love themselves, that stands with Muslims in this country who are being marginalized, who certainly are learning to be afraid and maybe to hate back and say, we will not be a part of that. That our Muslim brothers and sisters are predominantly not extremists and we will not participate in shaming and shunning and what happened in this country so shamefully with the indigenous population and with Japanese and German and Italian citizens of this country when we sent them to internment camps. We are in a tender time in our country where we are called to stand up and to see and hear the demons and be a place where we say no, where we see the God-given potential in every person and where we particularly make safe places for people like Butch, for people like at the first service and who are here and quiet in the second service who've been hurt by churches that teach hatred and fear, to stand with people of other religions, to stand with people who are mentally ill, whose demons are being awakened by this violence, by a rhetoric that demonizes people who are mentally ill. Friends, we are called to be no less than Jesus. Jesus spares no cost in freeing even one person from bondage. One person matters. One person is freed, that person frees another person, that person frees another person, and we have a whole community of people who are freed, who talk about the good news, who live the good news, who are a different kind of church. It matters. The way we look at people, the way we talk about people, the way we love people with our eyes, the way we respect people, not just on Sunday, but every minute of every day. God's mercy. The man sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed, restored to his right mind. The main point of this story isn't that the demons go in the pigs, but it's that this man is freed from an incredible social oppression. Not a myth about demons, no matter what you think about them. It's not about that. It's about social oppression. And Jesus keeps doing it because we can't see it, because we miss the point, we get distracted. Because we don't want to see our own demons and how we are sometimes part of the demons. The man has a new identity, a new reality. He's made whole. Jesus says to the man, return to your home and proclaim what God has done with you. No, you can't come with me. Your work is to go back into your community, to be a different voice, to stand up and say, no, that's not who we are. To be Jesus where you are, not to hide away in some safe place, not to go on the road with him. Our call is to be him where we are, to build church that's a different kind of church. Being made new scares the hell out of us, all people, that this guy that they used to have marginalized, changed, silenced, banished, now we have to readjust to someone made whole, someone with a voice, someone that reveals our secrets, our shame. When an addict gets free, gets sober, the whole family trembles because somebody's going to lose something when somebody's made whole. And as church, We're called to be a place every Sunday and every day of the week where people can be made whole, where we can come here and get patched up and sent back out and be better for it. Jesus goes out of his way, literally and figuratively, to see and hear and act to make whole. And we are all involved in that process. So today, as we remember Charleston, where 12 people, African American, were killed as they studied the Bible, a hate crime by an assault rifle, by a person who was taught to hate and fear. And Orlando, a week ago, where 50 people died and 50 people are hospitalized. Hispanic people, young people, GLBTQ and straight allies were shut down, suffered for hours, and all of their relatives and all the ways that that violence, that hate crime resonates in our world today. We're asked to accompany each other in a process of healing, to grieve, to cry out, to let our demons be heard and seen and think and act, that the demons that we see sometimes that we call epilepsy or homelessness, serious illness, addiction, aren't. We all are afraid. We're afraid of what change will bring. We're all threatened by what is new, what we don't understand. We're even afraid to change as church. The new church terrifies us. What might we have to give up to be made new? Something. But we'll also get something back. That's the deal. What are your demons? What are the demons of this church? What's driving us mad? What are the symptoms? And most of all, what are the root causes, friends? The root causes. How do we not only drive out demons, but how do we eliminate the causes that make them? This way, be the church. I want to end by reminding us of the words of Sinead O'Connor's powerful song about what it means to be this church. Oh, take me to church. I've done so many bad things, it hurts. Yeah, take me to church, but not the ones that hurt, because that ain't the truth, and that's not what it's for. Yeah, take me to church. Oh, take me to church. I've done so many bad things, it hurts. Yeah, get me to church, but not the ones that hurt, because that ain't the truth, and that's not what it's for. I'm gonna sing songs of loving and forgiveness. Songs of eating and of drinking, songs of living, songs of calling in the night, because songs are like a bolt of light, and love's the only love that you should invite. Songs of love and spiteful fails, songs that don't let you sit still, songs that mend your broken bones and that don't leave you alone. So get me down from this here tree. Take the rope from off of me. Sit me on the floor. I'm the one. I am. Please be seated for a minute. My benediction is going to be something that was shared at the first service by Linda Schloss. It's what made me cry, what got me started anyway. There's a wonderful service that's by the UCC, and it's the daily devotional. If you don't get it, let Donna know, and she'll tell you how to get that on a daily basis. This is one that's written by Pastor Quinn Caldwell, who is the pastor at Plymouth Congregational Church in Syracuse, New York. He writes, called Sanctuary. This is the text. As Jesus came out of the temple and was going away, his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. Then he asked them, "You see all these things, do you not? Truly I tell you, not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." And this is his reflection. "For me, it was the common ground in Ithaca, New York, a magnificently seedy roadhouse several miles outside of town. It had a gravel and grass parking lot, a perpetual haze of cigarette smoke, and an all-age cast of regulars you could easily have built a sitcom around. My husband will tell you about the park in Roanoke, Virginia, which he and his college friends would drive 45 miles to get to every weekend, and which they talk about today like it's a homeland from which they're in unwilling diaspora. Ask any queer person you know, and chances are they'll have a story to tell you about a place like this. They'll tell you about how they found a family there, how they found themselves there, how they felt safe for the first time on the dance floor there, how much they learned there, how they found love there, how they learned to be bold there, how they dressed like themselves for the very first time there, showing off their glitter, or butch haircut, or size 13 high heels without fear. That note you hear in their voices as they tell you about it, that's gratitude, reverence. 50 dead and more than 50 wounded hits hard anytime and anywhere. But for many queer people, what happened at Pulse hits as hard as shootings in churches hit for Christians, as hard as shootings in Black churches hit for Black Christians. It's not just the death toll. It's not just that it was a hate crime. It was that it happened in a sanctuary. Here's a true thing. Every sanctuary will be invaded by madness or death or slow decay sooner or later. Even the temple in Jerusalem fell. Even the body of God was penetrated. And here's what Christians believe. That body is still our refuge and our might. That the Lord of the dance hall wouldn't stay dead. That his pulse wouldn't stop pulsing. That they couldn't take our sanctuary away. So as you mourn and grieve and organize today, here's what I hope, that you do not let your sanctuary be taken from you. I hope you remember wherever it was you first found freedom and safety, that you go back there if you can, if only in memory. I hope you go out dancing. Prayer, our benediction. O God, you are our refuge and our might. Your sanctuaries are everywhere, and only some of them are in churches. Give us courage to never let them be taken away. Amen. I am is the only one I should adore. Amen.